everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food. And here we are. It's already part two of today's program, August 13, 2013. Gosh, time really flies when I'm talking about my favorite subject, food. It just goes like that. It's almost as good as eating it. And I'm going to bring on my next guest, Brian Patton, the Sexy Vegan. He's the author of The Sexy Vegan's Happy Hour at Home and The Sexy Vegan Cookbook. He's also the executive chef for Veggin' Out, a vegan food delivery service in Los Angeles. As the quintessential, quote, regular dude vegan chef, he started posting instructional cooking videos on YouTube as his witty ukulele playing alter ego, The Sexy Vegan, and quickly gained a large following. Visit him online at thesexyvegan.com. But before you go there, let's listen right now because I'm going to bring Brian on. Hi, how you doing, Brian? Welcome to
Oh, here I am. Hi, Karen.
Hi. Well, I think we're on a very similar mission, which is to make plant-based food fun and delicious.
I would agree. That is my mission indeed.
Yes, so I was happy to discover you and there was a time in my life, I've been vegan over 25 years, and there was a time when I thought I knew all the vegans out there. And now it seems like I'm learning about a gazillion of them every day, which is really...
We're multiplying exponentially.
Yes, and, you know, I have nothing... I'm not procreating, so it's not like I'm making any, but somehow they are multiplying.
Yes, they are.
And it's a beautiful, beautiful, delicious thing.
I agree.
All right, so shall we talk to Brian or shall we talk to your alter ego, the sexy guy?
Well, your choice. Mostly the same guy, one is just a little bit more exaggerated and annoying. So,
okay, let's hold off on the annoying part and let's just jump right in. So, no, before we jump right in, I was trying to learn a little bit more about you and I wanted to know about your past. Because I couldn't find it anywhere.
Well, I'm very mysterious that way.
Yes.
So I try to keep things very under wraps.
I know you're from Pennsylvania, right?
Yes, I am from Pennsylvania. I'm from, like, the Pocono area, northeastern PA. You know, kind of rural, kind of, you know, not a place where a vegan would really live very well at this time, probably. You know, grew up sort of eating just... pizza and more pizza and stromboli and pierogies and whatever else was the local fare. I come from, my part of town was very, you know, it was Irish and Italian mostly, so there was a lot of that type of food. So, grew up having these huge, like, Sunday dinners over at my grandparents' house, homemade pasta, meatballs, you know, homemade bread, everything. I don't know what time they woke up in the morning to make this, but it was pretty insane that they fed like 16 people by noon with this everything made from scratch meal.
Yeah, so, amen to that.
So it was quite great, you know, to have that as part of my childhood for sure. So maybe that's where I got my little kind of spark for cooking.
Right. Well, I'm from New York, and I've lived all around the world, and I did go to college in Pennsylvania at Bucknell University, and
I went to Susquehanna University.
Well,
right,
I was
down the road.
I had a feeling.
Arch rivals.
It was the Stromboli page in your book that kind of got me curious because when I was going to Bucknell, I had a rock band, and my senior year, my band was at Penn State. And there was some amazing Stromboli in State College, Pennsylvania, where Penn State
University
was amazing.
Yes, there's a place right downtown State College. I think it's called Highway Pizza. I'm not sure if it's still there or not, but I think that's what it was called, and that's the go-to place.
Right, and I have to admit that I have kind of been Stromboli-free for the last quarter century just because it's not an easy thing to come by vegan-wise.
No, not in Los Angeles for sure. When I moved here 10 years ago, I, you know, got all these pizza menus dropped off on my doorstep, and I was like, oh, I'll order a Stromboli. And there was no Stromboli, so I called and asked, and they said they didn't know what that was. So, and I find that weird because there's so many, I had to figure that there's at least one person who moved from the East Coast to the West Coast and opened a pizza place. and put a stromboli on the menu, but I have yet to find that in 10 years of living here.
And you know, how hard is it? Stromboli's just like a rolled up pizza.
It's a tube of pizza. It's very easy, a very simple concept. Maybe they feel that
I don't know.
Like,
and in this,
Californians would be scared of that or something. I don't know.
Well,
I don't know.
Because, you know,
the East Coast is used to tubes. You know, they're used to subways and things and clothes and things, and we don't have that out here. So maybe that's the reason. I'm just guessing.
I don't know. But, you know, we've got the burrito is quite popular. It's not.
That is a good point.
And I've seen some pretty giant burritos that are almost as big as a stromboli. Not quite, but
yeah,
almost.
You are correct. I
so
am
maybe
seen
this,
that too. So
maybe the stromboli is the name.
I think you just shot down my whole tube argument.
There you go. Crash on the tube. Anyway, yeah. So the holy stromboli is the first entry in your happy hour at home book.
Yeah. That's correct.
And why don't you just back up a little bit now that I've already jumped into the book. What is this Happy Hour at Home book?
Okay. Happy Hour basically started as sort of a whim. I was, I came home it was like Friday night, and my pantry and my fridge were basically barren because, you know, it's the end of the week and I do my shopping and stuff on Saturday, so I didn't have much to deal with. The girlfriend was coming over, was coming home, who has since become the wife, and she, I didn't have, you know, I usually do all the cooking, so I didn't have anything to make a major meal, so I just took a can of beans and a couple whatever was left in the crisper and some grains and just put together these kind of small plates. They sort of didn't really make sense all that much at the time, but they were just these like little small plates, and we sat out on our little balcony and drank some adult beverages, and that was, you know, sort of happy how it began. And so I thought, oh, this is kind of nice. We have these small plates. It's almost like tapas type thing, but we don't have to go out to a bar and get crappy food and pay for drinks and deal with a bunch of people. We just got to do it in the comfort of our own home. So I thought, hey, let me do this every week. So every Friday I started doing the same thing. I would just grab random things, put them together. Sometimes things were good, sometimes they weren't good, but I was just, you know, shooting from the hip basically, and that was sort of fun. So what happened then is it sort of, my wife started like bragging to her friends about this thing that we were doing, and then they were wondering where their invitation was. So,
because they certainly weren't going to cook at home.
A romantic, nice thing for just her and I, became more of a job for me now, because now I have to feed more people, and I got to plan it out a little bit more, because, you know, these people are coming over this Friday, and these people are coming over next Friday, so. That was sort of how it all, that's where the happy hour idea came from. And so that's what's in the book, is just different menus, and the menus all kind of go, you know, one, you know, the holy stromboli, for instance, it has a stromboli, and then it has some quick jardinera, which is sort of like a quick pickled vegetable dish, and then these like little cannoli cups as sort of a dessert. So that would be an example of a happy hour menu that I would do before this book came to be.
Do people invite you over and make food for you?
No, never.
Can we talk about that a little bit?
Everybody comes here.
Yeah.
I'm always doing the work.
I know. Now,
absolutely.
Why is that? You know, we cook a lot here, and we love cooking, and we're real creative about it, and we love having parties and having people over. And yet, is it because, well, I think it's a number of things. I think because most people don't know where their kitchen is.
This is very true.
They don't know what to make. And then, if they're not vegan, it just scares them. What are we going to make? They're vegan.
What are we going to feed this guy? Absolutely. Like, you know, the few times where there's like, you know, if there's a party that I'm going to or something like that, you know, people get really freaked out. They're like, oh, well, you know, because of my friends, I'm pretty much the only vegan or vegetarian of our friends, aside from my wife, who's pescatarian. But, She, people like kind of freak out. They're like, "Well, we'll make sure we have something for him. You know, what can we have? Where should we get it? What should we do? What is he like?" And I'm just like, "I'll bring something. It's fine. It's easy for me to bring something. Don't stress." But people get very stressed out. And believe me, I appreciate that. It's a very excellent, nice gesture. But yeah, I do see that happening a lot.
Yeah, so the message is for those of you who want to invite us,
Don't stress out, because we are professionals. We are professional vegans. We, after being vegan for a certain amount of time, you know how to operate in the world as a vegan. You know that if you go into a restaurant, you do research ahead of time, you find out what's on the menu, maybe you can make something like that. You know, that's another thing. If we're going out to eat, somebody will suggest a restaurant to be like, oh, I don't know if there's anything there for you. I'm like, don't worry, I will find something on the menu. There's always a vegetable side dish. There's always a salad that I can take cheese and meat out of. You know, so.
But it's also good, a good
remain calm.
Yeah, remain calm.
And don't worry about it.
But it's also a good opportunity to open a cookbook like Happy Hour at Home and see if there's something that sounds good to you and try and make it, because you'll only be a better person.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it'll just open your mind a little bit if you do cook in the kitchen but you don't cook vegan. You know, seeing how easy things can be, how quick they can come together, and how good they can taste, you know, without any animal products is something everybody should really experience, because it's really not that hard. And that's why I do the books that I do.
I wanted to say a few things. I can't say them all at once, so I'll just take a deep breath. I don't know if I remember them as we go along. I learned to cook from cookbooks. And just from trial and error, and looking at dishes. I lived in France for 4 years, and as a vegan, I just looked at what other people were eating and thought, okay, whatever that is, I'm going to try and make it. And you learn that way. So for people that aren't comfortable in the kitchen and don't know how to cook, you just have to start. You just have to try something. So what if you fail? You try again.
Yep. Yeah. Absolutely. You have to be aware that you will fail. You will spend an hour and a half cooking something, and you'll burn it, you'll do something wrong, and you'll have to throw it away. It happens to everyone. It happens to me sometimes now. Like, it's just a fact of life. That will happen. So you have to be prepared for that and not give up when that happens. So I say start simply. Go find a vegetable that you've never eaten before, that you've never prepared before, and, you know, use that for a week. You can try different recipes with just that simple ingredient, like a kale or some sort of grain that you've never heard of before. Just try it and learn how to make that, and then next week, you know, pick something else and just tackle things slowly and slowly take an interest in the food that you're making.
Yes, it's so worth it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So worth it. The other thing that I wanted to mention was somewhere in the beginning of the book, I think, you talk about efficiency and managing and why some people don't succeed in the kitchen is because they're not planning, and how important that is.
Yeah, I mean, that is really very important when you're in the kitchen, especially if you're preparing a couple different dishes, you know, a main dish and two side dishes or something like that. You really have to use there's always going to be these pockets of time. So you don't have to chop up every single thing in the recipe, in all of the recipes at the same time. Because one thing you might have to chop up and put in the oven for an hour. So you do that first, put it in the oven, and then go back to chopping the other stuff. So what I've done in the book is at the beginning of the chapters are a menu. So each menu is like three, sometimes four dishes. So at the beginning of each menu, I have this efficiency tip that tells you when to do things across the three recipes. So you might do one thing for one recipe first, then skip to the second recipe because this will take this amount of time, and you utilize that pocket of time. So it tells you how to make these menus most efficiently, and hopefully the idea is that the reader would take that skill from just these recipes and be able to apply that to cooking out of any other cookbooks or any recipes from online.
Okay, now everybody that's listening right now, I know you're online. So if you go to thesexyvegan.com/gallery,
yes,
you'll be able to get a sampling of what things look like that are in this book.
Yeah,
right?
It's a full color photo gallery on the website. It's the same photos plus some more that are in the book. So that's just a quick way to go see them online, you know, before you buy the book. You can get some great full color beautiful pics of what types of dishes that you'll be finding here.
The one that makes me laugh the most is this, I don't know what you call it, but this spinach dip in the bread thing.
The spinach artichoke dip in the bread bowl.
Yes. Okay, now I'm sure this is like light years ahead of in flavor and quality and nutritional value than what was served. I don't know when these spinach dips and bread bowls came out. Was that like a 70s or 80s thing?
I think maybe, yeah. I don't know. I didn't become alive until 1978, so I don't remember the 70s really.
Oh, gosh, I do. And these were quite the popular thing, but this one looks just so much better. The bread looks better.
It's a recreation of a dish that there's a place in Sealings Grove, actually, which you should a town you should be familiar with.
Yeah, I bought my first car there. Oh, no, Susquehanna, not Sealings. No, Sealings Grove, Toyota, I think it was. Anyway, tell me more about Sealings Grove.
So anyway, there's a place called BJ's that we used to go to, and they had this, it's called Bongo Bongo Dip. And it was just this, like, bubbly, cheesy spinach artichoke dip with all kinds of cheeses. And it also had water chestnuts, which I hate, but I would just eat around those. So I wanted to recreate that dish because I just loved it so much, and who doesn't love a good spinach artichoke dip? So this one's mainly cashew-based, and it's super easy to make. You blend up some cashews and some spices, spinach and artichokes, and you're good to go. And, if you got a bread bowl standing by from 1972, good for you.
Very good. Now, I read that you became a vegan after working at Vegin in Los Angeles.
Right. Vegin Out is the name of the company. I'm executive chef there now. And we're a food delivery service, so we deliver a full week's worth of fully prepared meals to people in Los Angeles and Southern California.
Who don't know where their kitchens are. Yeah.
What's that?
For people who don't know where their kitchens are.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
I started working there just as sort of a prep cook. I was also doing marketing, but I was basically chopping vegetables, helping with the preparation of the food. And I was really unhealthy. I would probably weighed about 260 pounds. Mm. I had a lot of bad habits, like lots of alcohol and cigarettes and all this horrible stuff.
Mm.
And I thought, okay, I'm working for this vegan company. I'm sick of what I look like and how I feel and all the things that I'm doing. So I'll try being vegan for a month. I'm around this food. I'm learning about how to cook it. I have access to it. So I'll be vegan for a month and see what happens. So a month went by, I started to feel better, I lost a couple pounds, I thought, that wasn't that hard, let me see if I can do another month. So that led to, 10 months down the road, I'm 60 pounds lighter, and I just feel like I did when I was like 18 again. So from that point, I was like, that's it, I'm vegan now, I don't need to consume, I don't need to harm another being in order to survive and thrive and feel great. I made that connection.
Very good. I love stories like that. Now, let me ask you, does it extend to beyond food, your vegan philosophy?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I definitely didn't become vegan for the ethical types of reasons. I just did it for health reasons. I didn't really make a connection with the ethical reasons until probably right around that 10-month to a year mark. And from by nature of being vegan and looking up vegan recipes and vegan items, you can't help but come across the ethical, videos about slaughterhouses and all this sort of information. I listen to Colleen Patrick Goudreau's podcast a lot, Vegetarian Food for Thought, during my transition and, in that first year. And that's when I really sort of got hip to all that information, along with doing my own research. So, there was a point at which I was like sitting, when I really realized that I was vegan for more than just health, was about after about a year. I was sitting on my couch and a spider was walking across my floor. And 9 times out of 10 before that, I would just stomp on the spider, stomp it out of existence, and go about my day and not care about it. But for some reason, at that moment, I just, without thinking, I got a cup and a piece of paper, and I trapped it, and I, like, scooped it up, and I escorted it outside. And at that moment, my roommate walked into the room, and he was like, what are you doing? Why, what did you just do? I said, I have no idea why I just did that, but I guess, like, I don't kill spiders anymore. And so I sat down, and I thought about why did I do that, and I just realized that I realized the connection that I had with the spider, and that the spider was just going about its day. It didn't know that it was, like, on my turf, and scaring me and creeping me out. He didn't know that. He was just doing being a spider. So I think, you know, well, in the grand scheme of the universe, us humans, we don't know what we are. Maybe we're just a spider that hasn't gotten stepped on yet. So I put that on the spider. I'm like, okay, well, this spider hasn't attacked me in any way, so I'm just going to let him go about his day as I go about my day, not attacking people. So
the power of being mindful.
Exactly, and I had never made that connection until that moment.
Yeah.
And then from then on, I was like, okay, like, no more leather in my shoes, no more leather belts, no more...
Okay, I'm glad you brought that up, because it looks in your pictures that you you have a little fashion sense. Where are you getting your men's clothing?
You know, I get the Alternative Outfitters is a place that, you know, that's where I would get, like, my belts and... shoes, also Moo Shoes, I think is the name of a company.
Oh, yeah, they're in New York City, right here.
Yeah, so those are great places to get, you know, leather-free items. And the tie that's, because a lot of, if you see this, I'm wearing a bow tie. A lot of bow ties especially are silk, made from silk.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not all vegan place, but it's called the Tie Bar, and it's really cheap ties, you know, $15. They have a whole section that's just cotton ties that aren't made from any animal products. And you know, they're like $15, and they have a great, lots of killer designs. So I swear by them for the ties. So it's so easy, you know, to find clothes that are not animal derived, that there's no point in not getting it. I mean, maybe it's a little more expensive, but maybe oftentimes it's not. It's worth it.
Right. Okay. One other question. Yeah. Where does the ukulele fit into all of this?
I've been playing guitar for, you know, since college, and I don't even know where I saw somebody playing ukulele, or I heard, a friend of mine had a ukulele, and they brought it to a party. I was like, let me see that thing. So I started, like, messing around with it. I was like, I like the sound of this. So I started to learn it, and I just started to write, like, silly little goofy songs. I have a song about pizza. I have a song called Seriously, You Shouldn't Eat Meat. I have a song called The Bacon on a Ukulele Song. The song called Artichokes, You're One of a Kind. So I write little songs about food, and you can see all those on my YouTube page. If you just go to thesexyvegan.com, you'll see all the links to YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all that stuff where you'll find me.
Very good. I love it. I think it's really important to spread the word with music. It's something that we're doing at my nonprofit, Responsible Eating and Living, we've created recently, the Swingin' Gourmets.
Oh, yes, I know that.
Yes, and so that's all about swinging great music and food, and we need...
Yeah, but you all sing way better than I do. I'm horrible.
Thank you very much. Well, we try. Yeah. Well, Brian, thank you so much for joining me on It's All About Food. I hope maybe sometime you're in New York, I'll have you over. I'm not afraid to cook for you.
Oh, okay. All right. I'm up for the challenge of letting you cook for me.
Great. Well, you'll have to let me
thank
know.
You. Thank you so very much.
Okay. Thank you for joining me on It's All About Food. All right, just a minute left. I'm Karen Hartglass. You've been listening to It's All About Food. It's All About Food. It's All About Food. And I just wanted to let you know a number of things. Now, my website is responsibleeatingandliving.com. And you may remember a few years ago I interviewed Courtney Mader of Pure Water. They've got some great water distillers. And what I loved about them is they're made in the United States. Well, now, if you want to find them, you can go to responsibleeatingandliving.com and click on the Water Made Wonderful link and find out about these water distillers called Aquanee. I think they're a really great product, and so I'm happy to be affiliated with them. And then, of course, the Swing Gourmets will be coming out with the part 2 of our Real American Barbecue, and if you haven't seen the first episode yet, please check it out at swinggourmets.com. There we go. That's the end of the hour. Thank you so much for joining me. I've had fun. I hope you have. And remember, you can email me at info@realmeals.org, right? And what else? Have a delicious week.